Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chaf Amud Aleph, five lines down. Amar Ilfa. Behema b'shut rabim. The behema is walking through b'shut rabim. Pashta tzavara. Sticks out its neck. V'achla mi'al gabei chaverta. And it eats food from on the back of its friend, another animal walking through the b'shut rabim that has a load on its back. The animal reaches over with its head and eats from him chayevet. He is responsible. He has to pay the nezek. Now, obviously, the problem here is that we know that the din of Shein and Regel are Turim Birshut Rabim. So the question is, Lefi Ilfa, why is this Chayevet if this is a Din and Shen or Regel? My time, Gabei Chaverta Kechatzer Nizak Dami. The back of its friend, meaning the back of the other animal, is deemed to be like the Chatzer Nizak. So it's no longer considered to be Rishut Rabim, it's now Chatzer Nizak. In Chatzer Nizak, we know that Shein and Regel are Chayavim. So, lema misayele, let us say that we have a braita that supports this understanding. Haita kupato mufshilet achurav. There's a guy walking through the Rishut Rabim, and like people who are carrying loads, they throw it over their back. So he's got the load behind him. Pashta tzavara, bachla mimenu. Animal behind him leans over, sticks his head into his satchel, and eats the food that's there. Chayevet, you're responsible for that, because, seemingly, it's like Chatzer HaNizak, and this would be supportive of what Ilfa says, that anytime the animal eats off of the back of another animal, the back of someone's load, that's considered to be Chatzer HaNizak and not Rishut HaRabim. Or it says, Kedamarova Bikofetzet. No, the case there is a case where it jumped. Hachanami, so too in our case, it's Kofetzet. So obviously Rova is saying here that the case is different, and the reason you're Chayav is not because of what Ilfa says, because of Chatzer HaNizak, rather because of Kofetzet. What Kofetzet does is a machloket in the Rishonim. I'm going to come back to it because the Gemara is going to explain now where Rava said. Behechayit mar de Rava. Where was the original statement of Rava made? Aha! On this. Dama Rabbi Hoshaya, behema b'rishut rabim. We have an animal out in the b'rishut rabim. V'halcha v'achla ptura. If it's eating while it's moving, then it's ptura. Amda v'achla. If it's stationary, and then it eats, chayevet. Then you're responsible. Maishna halcha do'orchehu. What's the difference between when it's walking, which is the normal behavior of an animal, when it's walking to grab a bite to eat something, and therefore you're patur. Amda nami orchehu. So too, when the animal stops to eat, that's a normal behavior of the animal. If in Rishut Rabim, this is very similar to the Shita Tarif, that the reason that you're patur in Rishut Rabim is because orchehu. That's the normal behavior of the animal. So if it's a normal behavior of the animal, we'd expect you to be patur. Yet, there's a bifurcation of the din here, which says that when you're walking, you're patur. When you stand, you're chayav. What's the reason to differentiate if they're both normal behaviors of the animal? So Amarava bikofetzet. Rava answers that the din here is bikofetzet. Rashi over here says bikofetzet means that it acted out of the ordinary. That's not the normal behavior of the animal. And therefore, it's a subcategory of Karen. What Rashi says is, you flip switches. We went from being Shane to being Karen. Shane is Patur in the Rishut HaRabim. Karen is Chayav in the Rishut HaRabim. So by being Kofetzet, this jumping, which is an unusual or unexpected behavior of the animal, you've now changed tracks. And you were talking about Karen. That obviously means that when all these Piskei Halacha over here say Chayav or Chayevet, that means Chatzi Nezek, not Nezek Shalem, because talking about Karen. And therefore we're talking about Chatzi Nezek because it's a Tam. That's how Rashi interprets Kofetzet. On the other hand, many of the other Rishonim disagree with Rashi over here as to the meaning of Kofetzet. And you can see this in the Rif, the Rambam, the Ravid, the Rashba, all say that it's still Shane over here. And the reason you pay Nezek Shalem over here is because it's Kechatzer HaNizak. It's considered like the Chatzer HaNizak. Now, if you look in the Rabbeinu Chanano, and the Rosh is more explicit than the Rabbeinu Chanano, the Rabbeinu Chanano says, V'tirtze Rova, V'kofetzet V'ochelet Mimakom Gavoa. It's in a high place. She'enu Chashuv K'Rishut HaRabim. It's no longer considered to be the public domain. Because the animal doesn't eat there while it's walking normally. Then you're responsible. If it's low down, even if it stops to eat, because that's normal behavior. What the Rabbeinu Hananel says is, the tour that you have in Reshut Rabim is when your animal acts normally, and the access to the item is within the normal range of the animal. That means that it's normal for an animal to eat in Reshut Rabim. It's normal for an animal to stick its head out, to stop, to eat. Anything that's within easy range of the animal's getting to the food. If the animal has to jump up to a location that's way above its reach, that's already considered to be unusual behavior. Not unusual in the sense that it's no longer shein, but unusual in the sense that it's no longer considered to be reshut rabim. Because it's not ke'orche. It's not the normal way for the animal to eat or behave in the reshut rabim. Or the way that it's walking, it's not just a side show to its walking and therefore it's eating. Because of that, it becomes like chatzer nizak. So even though you're still in reshut rabim, we're redefining what reshut rabim means. Shudabim means anything within its normal purview. Things that are outside of the normal purview are not considered to be Reshut HaRabim anymore. They're already Chatzer HaNizak. And this really feeds into the Shita Tarif, that the reason you're Patur and Reshut HaRabim is Ki Orche. It's normal. It's just expected behavior that you would see in Reshut HaRabim. If you place your food within reach of the animals, they're going to eat it. So that's your expectation. If you put it out of the reach of the animals and then they jump up, that's not expected behavior, and therefore you'd be chayav, or be like chatzer nizak. Very good. So the reason they don't like Rashi's pshat is exactly what you're suggesting, which is the Gemara yesterday with the A's said if you jump up on the barrel, that's normal behavior. If there's food there, and you jump up there, that's normal behavior. So to call it Karen is very hard to say, because just because you change locations, that's not called Karen. Animals jump to wherever their food is. So that's why they reject Rashi's explanation, and they view it not being that it's Karen, but rather it flips it from Reshut Rabim to the Reshut HaNizak. Rav Soloveitchik wants to be medayik this as the Rambam. I think the Meiri says it more explicitly, which is that the way that the Rambam formulates it is, if an animal eats, le'chol zu mi'agabei zo, v'im katsa v'achla al gabei chaverta. It eats on the back of its friend, she'gabei chaverta kazer nizak hu chashuv. What he points out, and the Miri says this, I think, in the Gemara itself, which is that kofetzet is when the entire animal moves to the new plane. Which is that when the animal jumps, it jumped onto the back of the other animal. Therefore, when it's on the back of the other animal, it's eating in the chatzer nizak. It's not somebody that's standing in Reshut Rabim and eating off the top of the animal, but the kofetzet means it left the Reshut Rabim and moved into this new domain. And therefore, that's a third way to learn the Gemara over here, that kofetz, it means I've moved from Reshut Rabim to Reshut HaNizak, because the animal is now on the back of the other animal. Its legs are on the back of the other animal. It's moved actual domains, and that's why it's called Chatzer HaNizak. Right, so now, Bayir Rabbi Zeiro. Now we move on to a new question, which is, Mitgalgel Mahu. If it's rolling, what is the din? Hey, Dami, what's the case here? What exactly is going on? Kagon, the Kaima Amir B'Reshut HaYachid. You have these bundles that are in the Reshut HaYachid. And it's moving from Reshut HaYachid to Reshut HaRabim. On the other hand, if you look in the Rach, he has the opposite girsa, which is, and it's rolling from Reshut HaRabim into the Reshut HaYachid. So he has the girsa, just the opposite. My, what's the din? So over here you have a major machloket Rashi and the Tosafot as to what the exact case is. Rashi claims that the case is that the animal itself is doing the rolling. The object was found in the Reshut HaYachid, and now the animal moves it out to the Reshut HaRabim, and then eats it in the Reshut HaRabim. So the question according to Rashi is, do we go after the original location of the item, or do we go after where the damage was done, where the animal ate it? It started out in Reshut HaYachid, so the Zichayav, because that was the locus of the item before the animal intervened. Or do we say the damage done by the animal was after it rolled it into Reshut HaRabim, it ate it in Reshut HaRabim. So do we have to where it ate it, where it did the damage, and then you'd be patur because it's Reshut HaRabim. So the question there is, do we go after the origins, or do we go after where the damage is done? That's Rashi's question. Tosafot, for a number of reasons, doesn't like Rashi's pshat. And one of the major issues is the word mitgalgel. Mitgalgel does not include migalgel, which would be in the active form that the animal is moving it. Mitgalgel sounds like it's doing it by itself. It's moving by itself. Therefore, the Balei Tosafot say that the case here is that it's rolling by itself from Reshut HaYachid into Reshut HaRabim. It has a trajectory. It's rolling downhill from Reshut HaYachid into the Reshut HaRabim. The animal steps in and stops it from reaching the Reshut HaRabim and then eats it in the Reshut HaYachid. So the question is, what do we go after? Do we go after where it ate it, which is currently Rishut HaYachid? Or do we go after where the ultimate destination would have been? It would have ended up in Rishut HaRabim. The fact that he intercepted it, does that make it now Rishut HaNizak? Or does it mean that it really was in Rishut HaRabim? It would have ended up in Rishut HaRabim, so the fact that he intercepted it shouldn't make him Chayav. That's what the Bali and Tosafot say that the question is. And again, I showed you in the Rabbeinu Chananel, he has the opposite Girsa, which it seems to be rolling from the Rishut HaRabim to the Rishut HaYachid, and then he stops it from going into the Rishut HaYachid, seemingly the way that Tosafot's reading it, and therefore he ate it in the Rishut HaRabim. But it would have ended up in the Rishut HaYachid, so does his stopping it then when he eats in Rishut HaRabim make him Patur, or is he Chayav, because it would have ended up in the Rishut HaNizak, he just stopped it from ending up there. So his intervention changed the dynamic of the situation. Tashma. Detani Rabbi Chia, Masoi Miktzato Bifnim Umiktzato Bechutz. You have some sort of load that is partially inside, partially outside. Achla Bifnim Chayavet, you eat it on the inside, you're Chayav. Achla Bechutz, Tura, you eat it on the outside, you're Patur. My love, what's the scenario here where you can have an item that is both on the inside and the outside? Mitgalgel Va'ati, as a case where it was moving. And what we say here is, wherever you ate it is what makes the difference. So that if it's rolling and going, wherever you eat it, that's where you're going to be held responsible for it. At least according to Rashi, who says that the animal is moving it, then we say here, if he eats it in Bifnim, then he's Chayav, Bifnim. If he eats it Bachut, he's not Chayav, he's Patur. Indicating that wherever he ate it, that's what makes the difference. It doesn't matter that it started in Rishut HaYachid or started in Rishut HaRabim. Wherever he eats it, that's what matters. That would be the way Rashi reads it. The way that the Bali HaTosafot would read it is that mitgalgel va'ati means that he intercepted it, and by intercepting it, it doesn't matter. If he ate it in Rishut HaYachid, even though he intercepted it, it was going to Rishut HaRabim, he is Chayav. If it intercepts it in Rishut HaRabim, he'll be Patur. That's the way that you would read this based on the Havamina. The Gemara says, lo, you don't have to read it that way. Ema achla al ma shebifnim chayevet, al ma shebechutz ptura. Rashi says over here, al ma sheya munach mitzchila bechutz ptura, v'al shemunach mitzchila bifnim chayevet, debata de shakli le'azlinan. We go after where the origins of the object were. As opposed to the previous statement, which said that it had to do where it ate it, now we're saying it has to do where it started from. What was bifnim? He'll be chayavan. What was Bachutz in the Rishut HaRabim? He will be Paturan. For the Bali HaTosafot, that will mean that wherever it was heading, that's what where it be. Meaning that if it was coming from Bifnim and he intercepted it and ate it Bifnim, then for the Bali HaTosafot, go after the ultimate destination of where the item was going. V'yibay Zema, Kiyama Rabbi Chia, the case of Rabbi Chia is Biptila Tasafsata. That is a case where you have very long hay, or you have a bundle of something that is extremely long. That's what you were suggesting, David, that the case here is where it extends both Bifnim and Bachutz. It's not something that's moving from Bifnim to Bachutz, but at least simply something that's sitting Bifnim and Bachutz, and therefore where you eat it matters. So for Rashi, who says here that it goes Batar Safsata, he says here, Hilkach Hazlin and Batar Behema. We go wherever the animal is standing. So that wherever the animal is standing and he eats it, then, since he can pull the item all the way to where he is, therefore the chiyuv is where the animal is standing. Unlike where you have, like, grains, where just because the animal eats one grain of sorah doesn't mean that the next grain of sorah is going to come there. The next grain of sorah is over the line, is on the other side. So therefore, when it comes to items that are smaller, they'll be defined by the boundary, which is whatever's inside is inside, whatever's outside, outside. When you have a long item like this, it'll be defined by where the behema is. So wherever the behema pulls it towards, that will be the chiyuv. That's the way Rashi reads it. The Bali HaTosafot over here, following similar to the Rabbeinu Chananel, says, Ma b'shifnim Rishut HaNizak v'chayav, Ma shebechutz Rishut HaRabim u'ptura. So that whatever is found inside is the Rishut HaNizak and your chayav. Ma shebechutz, whatever is outside is Rishut HaRabim u'ptura. And Tosafot says, what was the Havamina? The Havamina ba'asafta would be that since it's sitting in two locations, we'd go batarov. Wherever the robe is the robe bifnim, we'd consider it all be bifnim. If the robe was bachutz, we'd consider it all be bachutz. But in the end, what the Rabbeinu Chananel is saying, and the way the Bali Tosafot would read it is, no, we don't go by the robe, we go by, and that's Rabbi Chia's Chiddush, by the actual location of where the item is. So that's the difference. Rashi says in the end, you're only chayav for where the behema eats it and standing, because it can pull the whole thing towards it in that one location. Now then, for the Bali Tosafot, the Rabbeinu Chananel, You split it. Whatever's in is in. Whatever's out is out. And that is, the Havamina was that maybe you go Batarof, and we don't say that over here. Now, according to these answers, both answers over here, the Gemara has a proposition, which is that this should be supportive of Rabbi Zeira's statement. That Rabbi Zeira asked the question of Mitgalgel, what's the case of Mitgalgel, what do we say the din is? So Gemara has proposed that this be an answer to that question and say that the answer is, this is Ema V'ati, and therefore, it'll be all about, for Rashi to be wherever it originated, that would be the case. For Tosafot to be wherever the destination is, that would be the case. The Gemara, when it rejects it, doesn't say that that's not the right way to interpret it. It just says it's not mukhrach to read it that way. You could read it this way, or you could read it that way. By saying that you could read it either way, the Gemara leaves it as unresolved. And that's what the Rabbeinu Chananel says over here, that Bayad Rabbi Zeira, lo yifshita, is not answered, and it's a teku. It doesn't matter if you use the first answer or the second answer. Either one is just a way to be docha, the possibility that it's Megalgal V'Ati. It's the case of Rabbi Zeira. All we're trying to do is show that this braita does not have to be what Rabbi Zeira suggested, or the question that Rabbi Zeira was raising, and therefore it's not relevant to us. It might be a separate din, which is Abchia is telling us something about the din, which is that, according to the first answer, we don't know because you can interpret it either way. If you say it's a safsato, then according to Rashi, it means it goes where the behemoth is standing, and according to Balei Tosafot, and the Rabbeinu Chananel, means that you go after wherever the item is, on the inside or the outside. But otherwise, it has nothing to do with the answer to our question, because it's just not addressing our question at all. Right now, the Gemara goes back to the Mishnah, Achlak Sutu Kelim. Right after that in the Mishnah, it qualifies the Mishnah and says, Bameh Dvarim Amurim B'Shut HaNizak. That's only true when it's in the property of the Nizak. But B'Shut HaRabim Patur, which is what we know, that Shein and Regal are Paturim, B'Shut HaRabim. Gemara wants to know that qualification, on what part of the Mishnah is it speaking? The Mishnah had two statements before that. One was, if it eats things that are Ra'oi La, like Perot and Yirakot, you're Chayav. If it eats Ksut and Kelim, you are Patur. Then it brings the qualification. Is the qualification modifying both of those items? Or is it only modifying one of those items? That's the machloket here. Ahai, that qualification, on what does it go? Amarav akulu, it goes on everything there, which is unusual. Which is saying now that, in the first case, when it's eating fruits and vegetables, we understand. Shein is patur b'shut rabim, it's chayav b'shut anizak. But when it eats ksut and kelim, that's no longer shein, that's called karen. Karen is chayav, both in b'shut rabim and in the b'shut anizak. So what does Rav mean over here? That it's modifying both. That you'd be patur and reshut rabim. Mar says, my taima, kol mishaneh, uba acher vishinabo patur. That if someone acts in a manner that is not the normal course of behavior, and then it's damaged also by unusual behavior, you are patur. Meaning someone who does a shinoi, does something unusual, and then there's another unusual, two unusuals, make it that it's as if it doesn't exist and it's patur. So in this instance, the person who put his ksut and kelim out in the reshut rabim, that's not normal behavior. Nobody puts their clothing out in the reshut rabim. You put your clothesline out in the reshut rabim, you don't expect your clothes to be there next time you come to get them. They're going to be gone. So that's unusual behavior. Now, an animal does karen, goes and eats them, that's unusual behavior. An unusual to an unusual, that is patur. Shmuel amar, lo shanu ela peirot v'yakot, ava ksut v'kelim chayevet. Shmuel seems to say what is more simple reading of what you would have thought in the Mishnah, which is that the qualification is only on the first statement, which is by Peirot and Yirakot, you're Patur and Reshut Rabim because it's Shein, you're Chayav and Reshut and Izak. When it comes to Ksut and Kelim, you're Chayav both in Reshut Rabim and Reshut Yachid because it's Karen. Karen's Chayav and Reshut Rabim and it's Chayav and Reshut and Izak. V'chein amar Reish Lakish Akulu. Reish Lakish agrees with Rav's position and says it applies to the whole Mishnah. V'azda Reish Lakish the Tamein. Reish Lakish is the Shitato. Dam Reish Lakish Shtei Parot Reshut Rabim. You have two cows in Reshut Rabim. Achat Rivutza V'achat Me'alechet. One of them is resting, crouched down and resting. One of them is walking. Ba'ata Me'alechet B'Rivutza. If the walking animal kicks the sitting animal, the resting animal, Tura, you don't have to pay. Rivutza B'Me'alechet. On the other hand, if the one who's laying down kicks the one that is walking, chayevet, you are responsible. What he's saying is, revutza is not normal behavior. You don't put your animal down to rest in the middle of the reshut rabim. It's dangerous. People are going to trip over it. But besides that, it's going to get hurt sitting there. So that's not normal behavior. So if the animal that is laying down in reshut rabim, which is an unusual behavior, gets kicked by another animal, biata is karen. It's an unusual behavior. Two unusual behaviors? Patur. That's what Relakish Lakish says. On the other hand, the Revutza, the one on the ground, kicks the one that's walking. The one that's walking is acting normally in Rishut Rabim. Therefore, the Revutza that goes down and kicks it, that's Karen Rishut Rabim and Yubi Chayav. Because there's only one unusual behavior here, is the animal on the ground kicking the animal that is walking. Tosafot notes over here that Tavayu Tzrichi, you need both of these statements of Reish Lakish. You need him to tell you this by our Mishnah, that it's not normal for people to put their clothing in Rishut Rabim. We're going to see that there is a opinion that disagrees with that. And number two is, only if the one that's laying down kicked the one that's walking, that you chayev it. If the walking animal trips over the animal that's laying down there, then you're not responsible for that damage that happens to that animal, because you should have taken him a different way. He should have walked around. The fact that he walked over this animal, that already makes it the responsibility of the one who is walking. So for that reason, we need both of these statements of Reish Lakish to teach us when you act unusually in Rishut Rabim, and there is another unusual behavior, patur. If there's only one unusual behavior, you're going to be chayav. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, lo shanu ela peirot v'yirakot, aval ksut v'kelim, chayavet. So Rabbi Yochanan seemingly aligns with the position of Shmuel, who says that this qualification, the Mishnah, is only on the peirot and yirakot, not on the ksut and kelim. Leva Rabbi Yochanan lately de Reish Lakish. Similarly, Rabbi Yochanan also disagrees with the other statement of Reish Lakish. He agrees with Shmuel. Shmuel and Rav argue. And Reish Lakish, who aligns himself with Rav, and Rabbi Yochanan aligns himself with Shmuel, seemingly, then Rabbi Yochanan be arguing Reish Lakish. Therefore, Leva Rabbi Yochanan lately de Reish Lakish afilu b'shtei perot. Let us say that he doesn't hold that other statement of Reish Lakish. Lo, Gemara says that's not true. The Olam Itlei. He does hold the Reish Lakish's statement by the two perot. This is what Tosafot just quoted. Rabbi Yochanan says that it is normal behavior for people to hang up their cloak or their clothing in Rishut Rabim. Sometimes they need a rest. They're working hard, they're moving along, so they take a rest for a second, they take off their jacket, they hang it up on a post. So it's normal for Kelim and Ksut to be in the Rishut Rabim for these short periods of time. So that's not considered unusual behavior. Aval Behema Laborcha. For an animal to be seated in the middle of the Rishut Rabim, that is not usual behavior. So when it comes to the clothing, since that is normal behavior to put clothing there, when the animal comes and eats it, there's only one shinui, that's Karen, and you're going to be chayav. Then when the animal that is laying in the Rishut Rabim, that's already unusual behavior. If the walking animal kicks it, that's unusual behavior against unusual behavior, that makes you patur. So you can hold a Reish Lakish, even though he disagrees with Rav here and agrees with Shmuel, meaning that you could separate between the two cases. So even though the Gemara says that Reish Lakish is the Tameh, who says Shinui and Shinui, and therefore they align his two positions of Shtei Parot and the case here in our Mishnah, nevertheless, what the Gemara says is you can bifurcate those dinim and say one is normal and one is not normal, and that's what Rabbi Yochanan does. He'll agree with Reish Lakish with regards to Shtei Parot, but he disagrees with him in the explanation of our Mishnah and says that the qualification is only in the first line of the Mishnah, not on the totality of the Mishnah. Im ne'anit, mishalemet, mashen ne'anit. If it gets ana, then you pay for the ana that it got. Vikama, how do you make compensation for ana? Rabba Amar d'me amir, that you pay for basically straw. Rabba Amar d'me sarim bezol. Rabba says you basically pay for the food it ate, but the lowest quality or the cheapest price of the item that it ate. Rashi later on will tell us that Tamei Sarim Bezol is 2/3 of the market price. That what would be the willingness of this individual to feed his animal better feed? Normally he feeds him straw. But now he got some Sarim, which are more nutritious for the animal. How much would he be willing to pay to have his animal have slightly more nutritious food, even though normally he wouldn't have given it to him? So Rava suggests that he would pay him Tamei Sarim Bezol, the lowest quality or pricing of food in that category. And Rashi tells us that's about 2/3 of the market price. That's what you would charge him for the hana that he got. Tanya kavati de rabo. Tanya kavati de rovo. We have a braita that supports each of their positions. Tanya kavati de rabo. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai amar. Ein mishalemet el dmei amir bilvad. You only pay the dmei amir. You pay for a bundle of straw, which is basically the lowest quality and cheapest food that you can feed your animal. So that's what you pay. That's what you normally would have fed it. So that's what you can pay for it. The Meiri goes out of its way to point out that if the animal normally ate a certain type of food, and that's what he ate in Rishut Rabim, the owner can't make a claim there that I would have fed him straw. If he normally feeds him barley, And then he ate barley in the Rishut Rabim. The owner can't say, oh, I don't feed him barley. I feed him straw. I don't have to pay for straw. Because he does feed him barley. In that case, he would have to pay for the barley, or he paid the mezol of the barley. But in a case where he does feed him straw, and now he eats something better, that's all he has to do. He says, I would have fed him straw. That's what I'm willing to pay for, because that's what I saved over here. Tanya Kavate de Rava. We have a bride that supports Rava. Im ne'anit, mishalemet masha ne'anit. If you get anah, you pay what you got anah from. Ketzad. Achla kava kobayim. In omrim tishalem d'mehem. If he ate a kav worth or a kabayim worth, we don't say pay the real value. Ela omdim. Kama adam rotze l'achil b'emto davar aruila. How much would a person pay to feed it something that's good for it, or nutritious for it? Afal pishen ragil. Even though it's not its normal feed. So it's not its normal feed, but if he got the chance to give him this extra good feed or better feed, what would he pay for it? Is he willing to put up in the price? So therefore, if it eats wheat, or something that is detrimental to its health, turah, you'd be patur, because there it's not benefiting the owner. If you're paying mashanenit, right, that means you have to have gotten hana. If it eats something that's detrimental to its health, you haven't gotten hana from that. It's actually damaging to the animal. And therefore, you would not be responsible to pay in that case, because in that instance, you would not pay for anything to be put into the animal's mouth. If you came to the person and said, how much would you pay for the animal to eat this that's detrimental to its health? You'd say, nothing. I would never pay that. I would never buy that from an animal. Therefore, you are patur. You could plausibly suggest that according to Rabba's position, you'd still have to pay for it here, because even though it's detrimental to his health, nevertheless, he ate and he filled his belly, and now you don't have to supply the straw anymore. So maybe you would have to pay for it, because for him, it's just basic feed. It has nothing to do with whether you would pay or want him to eat this. For Rava, or the Braita by Rava, it's about what you would pay to have him eat this better stuff, or to eat something unusual. But if it's something that's detrimental, you would never pay for it, and never be patur. Could argue that Rava would also agree with that, where it's detrimental to the health. Now, what's interesting over here is that the Rambam, when he paskins this halacha, the Rambam says that if the animal eats, and you have to pay mashe ne'anit, v'im achla utam b'rshut ha'rabim v'ne'anit, ro'im otam kilu hein se'orim o amir, u'mshalem d'mei amir o d'mei se'orim b'zo. So he, Rambam, brings down both Shita Rava and Rava in combination. It's very difficult. But the Gemara here clearly thinks that they are arguing, and the Rambam brings them down. The Magid Mishnah claims that Rambam didn't know which way to paskin. Therefore, he brought both of them down, even though it's very difficult to suggest, which is that even if you argue that he didn't know where to paskin, we would go the cooler then in those situations, and you wouldn't bring both deot down. How does that help you? On the other hand, the Kesef Mishnah says that Menira to him, that Rabba Verova lo plige, that they don't argue, but they rather are discussing different periods of time in the seasons. During the season of the harvest, they feed the animals the stalks, the amir, the bundles of the barley and its stalks, or the straw in that case. During the rest of the year, they have to store grain, and they give it grain. So depending on what time of year, then d'mei amir or d'mei serim b'zol would be relevant. So that's how the Kesef Mishnah explains the Rambam, that they're not really arguing over here, but it has to do with the time period in which you are discussing. You could answer, like the Meiri suggests over there, that it really depends on what the farmer feeds his animal on a normal basis. And that might be what the Rambam is trying to address over here, which is that if he does feed him sorim, then it's d'mei sorim bezol. If he doesn't feed him sorim, then it's d'mei amir, it's straw. And it has to depend on really what the farmer feeds the animal in a normal case. And that would change the dynamic here. That's possibly what the Rambam might be addressing. So now the Gemara shifts from this about mishalei mashananit into a new sugya. It's a shas sugya, very famous sugya, of zenene v'zelo chaser. When someone gets benefit, the other party has no detriment to them. Do you have to pay? Do you have to compensate in that situation? So amalei Rav Chista Rami Bar Chama. Chista tells Rami Bar Chama, lo avit kaban b'orta. You weren't with us last night, b'tchuma, in the tchum. So the way Rashi explains tchum, he brings down two interpretations. One is, you weren't so close by. You were far away last night, so you weren't able to join the conversation. Other interpretation that he brings down is, Tchum shel Beit Midrash. You were not within the framework of the Beit Midrash, meaning the Talmid Chachamim, their world revolves around the Beit Midrash. So the Tchum of the Beit Midrash means you weren't in the Makom HaTorah last night. You were away from the Beit Midrash. I say that you could probably connect the two, which is that we know that the Beit Midrash was outside of the city in their day. And then a lot of times it was outside or near the Tchum Shabbat, And therefore, tchuma could be both. It could be that you were outside of this space, meaning that you weren't with us out where the Beit Midrash is found. It could both be physically and figuratively. You were not within the tchum of the Beit Midrash last night. Dibayalan mile maliyoto. We asked this wonderful question. Amar mai mile maliyoto. What was this wonderful question that came up? I'm like, this is what he said. Hadar b'chatzer chavero shalom idato. Person who takes up residence in his friend's house without his permission, without him knowing about it. The squatter, tzarech lalot lo schar, oin tzarech. Does he have to pay him or not? Does he have to pay rent that the fact that he's living in this house? Hey chidami, what's the case, first of all? Ilay me b'chatzar de lo kaim el agro. It's a location that the owner normally would not rent out. But gavra do avid the megar. It's an individual who doesn't normally pay for rent. The reason he doesn't pay for rent, according to Rashi, is because he has plenty of properties. He has other properties where he can go live. And therefore, he has no reason to pay for rent, because if he doesn't stay here, he'll go stay in one of his other places that he has. So that's why he doesn't pay rent. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Chananel says that it's a case, shekein kol makom sheshochein eino noten schar. It's an individual who is of high stature. And therefore, wherever he goes, he doesn't pay rent. He's so chashuv that everybody wants them to go to their etzlam below schirut. Everybody wants them as their guest. Meaning that he's such an important figure that everybody wants to host him, and therefore he would never pay rent because he would be hosted wherever it is that he went. So Rashi says it's because he has enough other options available to him. The Rabbeinu Chananel suggests that his standing makes it that he doesn't pay rent in this case. So in the case where they wouldn't have rented it out anyway, this guy wouldn't have paid rent anyway, then this guy's getting no benefit. The other guy's not losing anything. So of course, that would be patur. There's no reason to pay over there. Ella b'chatzer de kaima la'agra. It's a case where they could have rented out the property. B'gavra avi the megar. And it's an individual who normally pays rent. In that case, one guy's getting a benefit. The other guy's losing money. In that case, of course you're chayav, because you took away his rental property, and you would have paid rent in another situation. So in that instance, of course you're chayav. Now Tosafot points out over here that even though living in there, technically he could say to him, I'll get out whenever you want. But as Tosafot points out over there, as long as you're in there, chosvan shurim et ze omeid bebeito en mevakshim imen alaskir. It looks like it's not available for rent. And therefore, the Rosh says that even if the guy makes a statement that I'll get out whenever you want, it does not help because people don't see it as a rental property or an available rental property, and that hurts the person who wants to rent it out. Lotzricha, so what's the case here? The chatzer de lo kaim el agra. It's a case where the chatzer is not available for rent. The gavra de avi de megar. But the individual does pay for rent. If he had to go somewhere else, he would pay rent. But the property itself is not a rental property, so the balabite would never have collected rent. He wouldn't have made money off this. But the guy who's living there is saving money because he's not paying rent. My, what's the din over here? Matzi amalei, my chasartich. The guy who's living there can say, what did you lose? You have no downside over here. You wouldn't have rented this property out anyway, and it's empty. So you lost nothing over here. O dilma matzi amar. Or can the landlord say to him, hait night? You got benefit from it. And since you got benefit from it, you should have to compensate me. So now, if you think of the permutations that we had here, we knocked out two of the permutations. One permutation is zenene v'zeh chaser, where we said you're definitely chayav. The case where it's zeh lo nene v'zeh lo chaser, the case where there's no benefit to one party and there's no loss in the other party, but there we said you're for sure patur. And our question came up in the case of zenene, where the one party is getting benefit and the other one is lo chaser, is not losing out. What about the fourth permutation, which is the case where ze lo nene, he's not getting benefit, ze chaser, but the other guy is losing money. Meaning the property was a rental property, but the guy who stayed there wouldn't pay for rent. He'd go somewhere else. He has other houses. What's the din over there? So the Balei HaTosafot say over here, you can see that in the second last Tosafot on the Chof Amud Aleph, ze nene vezeinu chaseru afilu bechaser de kaima la'agra, begavar dolo avid lemegar. So that's the case. It's a case where he's chaser, but the guy would not normally pay rent. But much of the Meimar is a patur. Over there, you're definitely patur. Kevin shalom nene, because you didn't get any benefit. Afa pi shegaram hefsed lechaveiro. Even though he causes a loss to his friend, dafilu girsho chaveiro metom, and al dabfav ein ze elegroma ba'alma. Because if you chase your friend out of his house, lock his door, and then he can't get in it, you're not chayiv over there, because that's just groma. Your prevention of him going into his house just is goreim hefsed. It's not a direct loss. Similar over here, when you live in the house, you don't get any benefit from it, but the loss that you create for the other party is only an indirect loss. We can't connect between the loss and the fact that you are living there. So what you have here is the Balei Tosfot suggest that a case would be patur. You can see there's a little aleph that's there for the gra. The gra quotes to you and says, but the rif disagrees. And that's true. The rif and the rosh disagree with this Balei Tosfot. And they say in a case where it's zeh, enonen, vizeh, chaser, then in that case you are chayav to pay over there. The main reason, and this is very important here, is to discuss why is a person chayav to pay in these circumstances? What is the driving force for the obligation? Is the driving force for the obligation the loss of the party that is providing the service? Or in nezek in general? Is it because someone else suffered a loss, that's why you have to make compensation? Or is the driving factor zenene? Is the benefit in party? The party has to be a beneficiary. Now, what the Balei Tosfot are clearly saying is that the loss, or seemingly the loss, is not a sufficient reason. Because the other party didn't get any benefit, therefore, you're not chayav in that case, because you can't connect between him and the loss that is there. So that's because zeh chaser by itself would not be sufficient grounds for you to be chayav. It's not even clear here whether zeh nene would be enough grounds for you to be chayav. You might need both of them. You might need chaser, that the other guy loses money, and zeh nene, and the other guy's getting a benefit. So that way we connect between the two of them. On the other hand, what you see from the Rif and the Rosh is that the loss is a sufficient grounds for you to be obligated to pay. Because they say that as long as the other guy's losing money, it doesn't matter that you're not getting a benefit, you're responsible, and you are chayav in that instance because of this. So now, in the case over here, the Rosh disagrees with the Tosafot. The Balei Tosafot have a good reason to suggest over here that you're not chayav because it's grama. But what the Rosh makes a difference over here, and this is a very important distinction, he says, the case that Tosafot quotes where you lock your friend out of the house, over there you're causing him a loss, but you're getting no benefit from that. Over here, ze ochel chesrono shel ze. You are the beneficiary of the other guy's loss. So even though technically you wouldn't have rented out and you don't get any benefit, but you are utilizing the loss of the other friend. And over there he says that connects you to the damage that is done over here. That's important. Even according to the Rosh and the Rif who say that it's enough that the other guy suffered a loss for you to be responsible, we have to connect you directly to that loss. What is the indication of connecting you directly to loss? Many times that's the hana, that you got benefit from it, that's what connects you. But in some cases, like this case, where you're living there and you wouldn't have paid rent anyway, what connects you to the loss is the fact that you are utilizing the loss. You're living, and that's exactly what's causing the loss to the other party. And that's what connects you to the responsibility or the need to pay this individual for the loss that is there. That difference will pop up here in the Gemara again, as to the two shitot within Zenenev is a lo chaser. One guy is getting benefit, the other guy is not losing out. Are you responsible? Are you chayav over there? It will derive from the same thing. What is the driving force of payment? Is it the loss of one party or the benefit of the other party? So now, Amalei Matnitani. He said back to him, it's our Mishnah. So he says to him, hey Matnitin, which Mishnah? So over here, Rav Chista says to Rami Mechama, you missed this great conversation. You missed this great question. And then he tells him what the question is. Rami Bar Chama says back to him, it's a Mishnah. So he says, which Mishnah? That's what Rav Chista says. Amalei, v'chitishameshli, if you do something for me, you service me, like the way that Talmidim would service a Rav, then I'll tell you it. This is very interesting, only because Rav Chista is much older than Rabbi Bar Chama. He's also probably his Rebbe. And the fact is that he's flipping it on his Rebbe and telling his Rebbe he has to do something for him and act like a Talmid towards Rabbi Bar Chama, which is unusual behavior. What you have to suggest probably is that he wanted to make a significant impression on him that this was something to remember. So Shakel Sudre Karachle. So he took his turban or his scarf and he folded it up for him. Amalei Imnanit Mishalemet Mashananit. Our Mishnah, if you get benefits, you pay for the benefit that you got. So Amarova Kamalo Chali Velo Margish Gavra de Mare Saye. He says, how is this that Edim and bat an eye? That Gavra de Mare Saye, that this individual was helped by God, that Rav Chista didn't catch on that Rami Bar Chama's answer is not correct. I mean, Rami Bar Chama makes a suggestion about what the answer is, and Rav Chista swallows it whole. How is it that Rav Chista took it, Rava says? Even though it's nothing like our Mishnah, he accepted it from him. Hi, zenenev zechoser. What are you talking about? The case of the Mishnah is a case where the animal benefited from eating the food, and the other guy lost the food that was eaten. There it's zenene and zechoser. Vai zenenev zelochoser. The case here that we're discussing is a case where he got hanah in the house, but the other guy didn't lose. So why do you think zenenev zechoser lochoser? Who? They're two different cases. The case of the Mishnah is one party benefited and the other one lost. There, everybody agrees you're a chayav. Over here, it's one party got the benefit, the other one didn't lose. That's why there's a question. For Rami Bar Chama. So how's Rami Chama? Why would he compare it to the Mishnah? So clear the difference over here. Stam peirot b'shut rabim, afkure mafkir luhu. Stam peirot in b'shut rabim, people are mafkir. As Tosafot points out here, they're not literally mafkir them. They're hefker, you wouldn't have to pay anything. You wouldn't have to pay for ana, you wouldn't have to pay for any nezik, of course. So it's not hefker from the sense of real hefker, but rather, a person is resigned. That if he puts his fruits, he puts his objects out in the Reshut Rabim, there's a lot of risk. And he knows that he's undertaking that risk by putting him out there, and therefore he accepts that risk that he's going to lose them. So Rami Bar Chama says it's zelenev, it's zelo chaser. He's not chaser because he already gave up on it. He relinquished, in a sense, his rights to these fruits because he knows they may not come back. So in the end, when it doesn't come back, that's what he expected. He got what he expected. Therefore, it's zenenev, it's zelo chaser. So again, here also, this machloket here between Rami Bar Chama and Rava might revolve around, again, what's the driving force for obligation. For Rami Bar Chama, it might be enough that you got hana'ah. Simply getting hana'ah might be the driving force, and therefore you're chayav over here. Rava says no, that it's got to be a case where you get hana'ah, and there's chisaron, somebody lost from that hana'ah. And for that reason, you'll come out with different reasons. Akilat Yaakov tries to take the Tosfot and the Rashba versus the Rif Nerosh, what we discussed, and parlay that into basically explaining what we did, which is that there are differences. You'll come out with different outcomes here as to why you're chayav. When zeh nene v'zeh choser, why are you chayav? According to the Bali Tosafot, it's because you need both hana'ah and chisaron. That is the driving force of what makes you chayav. And for the Rif Nerosh, it's sufficient that you have chisaron. The loss is what drives here the obligation. And then the hana'ah is just a way to connect you to that loss. So even when there is a hana'ah and you just have chisaron, as long as we can connect you to that loss, then that's enough of a reason for you to be chayav. And therefore, their argument before will also have nafkaminot, even in the cases where everybody agrees you're chayav. Why you're chayav will be determined by their opinions in the other cases. All right now, the Gemara continues and says, Tanan, makif chaviro mishlosh ruchotav. So here the Gemara is going to try to deal with this case of zenene v'zelo chaser and bring you other cases like that. So you have an individual who has a field that is captive to his friend's field. You can see the picture in Rashi. Rashi says, Ruvain has a field that completely surrounds Shimon's field. V'gadaret arishona v'etashina v'etashlishit. Rashi's pshat is that Ruvain went ahead and put three walls, you can see the picture in Rashi, around Shimon's field. In order to separate between his field, Ruvain's field, and Shimon's field, he puts up three walls. Ein mechayvinoto. We do not obligate Shimon to contribute to the payment of that fence. Harivit mechayvinoto. But if he puts up the fourth wall, we would obligate Shimon to pay for it. Shmamina zenene v'zelo chaser chayav. From this you would conclude that someone who gets a benefit and the other person doesn't lose anything, you're still chayav. Over here, the beneficiary over here is Shimon. And the loss is Reuven's, but Reuven's putting up the fence anyway because Reuven needs the fence for his own field to protect against Shimon's field. So he's putting up the fence anyway. Now Shimon's a beneficiary of Reuven putting up the fence. And we're saying that Shimon's obligated to contribute when he puts up the four walls. Says Shani Otam, Damarlei at Garamli Hakefa Yitera. Because over there, Reuven can say to Shimon, you caused me to have to put up an additional fence. Had your field not been in the middle of my field, I would have just had to put the perimeter fence, the outer fence up. Now I have to put up outer fence, and now an inner fence. So since I have to put up an inner fence, that's a chaser. Reuven is losing because of Shimon's field in the middle. Had it not been for Shimon's field, he would suffice with the outer perimeter fence, and that would have been fine. So he says, it's not a case of zenene, v'zelo chaser, it's zechaser. Reuven is losing out over here. That's the way Rashi learns it. Bali HaTosafot say that they don't agree with that, but rather they say that Reuven is building the outer fence. It has nothing to do with this inner fence, but rather Reuven's putting up the outer fence, the total perimeter fence. Bali HaTosafot say, How can you say that there's no chaser over here? How could the Gemara even entertain that that's low chaser over here? When he puts up the field to separate between Reuben and Shimon, and he needs the field, and because of Shimon he's putting it up, it's of course a case of chaser. He said, you shouldn't have said that extra hekef. It should have said, you caused me a whole new fence. So Tosfot says that he thinks the reading of the Gemara is the outer fence. Reuben puts up the four outer perimeter walls around his whole big field. And he says to Shimon, you got to pay for it because you're a beneficiary of my fence. When I enclose my outer field, the inner field is also protected as well. And so Shimon says, Zenene Zelochasa, you would have to put up a fence anyway. So what's the problem here? I'm getting benefit, but you had to do it anyway. So what are you losing? He answers him, Hakefa Yeterta, because your field is in the middle, I have to make my fence bigger. Meaning for the same quantity of land, had your field not been in the middle, I would have put a smaller perimeter fence around. If Shimon wasn't there, Reuben's whole area would have just been more concentrated. It would have been smaller, and therefore he would put in a smaller fence around it. Now that Shimon's field's in the middle, Reuben has to build a much bigger fence. And he says, you're the cause of my having to put up a bigger fence. So therefore, it's not just lo chaser, there is chaser here because I'm putting up a bigger fence. Tashma amar Rabbi Yossi, ma'amad nikaf, v'gadarat revi'it, megalim alav et hakol. So the continuation of the previous case, but instead of the fourth wall being put up by Reuven, who has the outer field, it is erected by Shimon, who has the inner field. So for Rashi, that's easy to understand. He put up the fourth wall, the outer individual had put up the three walls, and now the inner individual puts up the fourth wall. For the Balei HaTosafot, we're speaking about the outer walls, then it would have to be a case where there were three walls put up on the outside, and then he finished off the fourth wall, whereby he's indicating that he really does want this outer wall to be there in order to protect his field on the inside. But because he put up the fourth wall, Megagalim Ed Levet Agol, we force him then to pony up for the 50% of the cost of the other three walls. Taima de Gadar Nikaf. That's only because he went ahead and put up that fourth wall. Hamakif patur. If the fourth wall was put up by Reuven, the person who has the outer fields, then we would not obligate him to make any payment according to Rabbi Yossi. Shvamina, from this you would conclude, Zenene, Vezelo Chaser, the inner person, Shimon, is a beneficiary of the fence being erected by Reuven. Lo Chaser, Reuven is going to put up the fence whether Shimon contributes or not, so he's not losing anything over here. Which should be patur. That would be your conclusion from here. Where it says, no, shiny hotam. Over here it's different. Because Shimon can make a claim as to why he should not have to contribute over here. Damarlei didi sagali benitira barzuza. Because I would have been satisfied with a very low-end, not costly fence. Meaning that if Reuven is putting up a stone fence or some significant barrier between him and Shimon, Shimon can say, yes, I like the fact that Reuven is doing this, but I wouldn't have paid for such a fancy wall or for such a significant wall or fence to be put up. And therefore, he can exempt himself. So even if you believe Zenene, Vezelo Chaser is Chayav, is obligated to pay, over here he can exempt himself from that payment by saying, I'm not interested in the value that he invested in this fence. I would have put up a fence, yes, but not the size or not the quality of that which Reuven did. And therefore, he can exempt himself. The Balei HaTosafot say, well, according to the one who says, Zenene, Vizilo Chaser is Patur, how come when the Nikaf, Shimon puts up the fourth wall, we obligate him to contribute to the other three walls? The other three walls were also a case of Zenene, Vizilo Chaser. So why shouldn't we say that he is Patur from contributing over there? What the Balei HaTosafot point out is that, yes, it's Zenene, Vizilo Chaser, but Zelo Chaser indicates that you wouldn't have expended any money to do such a thing. By him putting up the fourth wall, the Balei HaTosafot say that he indicates that he's willing to expend money to have a fence around him. Once he gives us that indication that he's willing to expend money, then we can say it's not just Zenene Vizelo Chaser, but rather Zenene and Zechaser, because the inner guy, Shimon, would have paid for a wall. He would have contributed towards a wall because he's benefiting from that. And now we see, by the fact that he invested in this wall, that he was willing to expend money. And in that case, then we force him to pay for the other three walls, even if you believe Zenene, Vizelo Chaser is Patur. Velo Domi Ladar B'Chatzer Chaviro, it's not similar to the case where he lives in his friend's house, Dolo Gali Adate Ele B'Chinam. The only thing that he revealed there is that he's willing to live or squat in this individual's house for free. He never makes any indication that he's willing to pay rent in order to live there. So the fact that he has shown no interest in expending money makes it that it's zenene, v'zelo chasu, should be patur. Whereas in this case, we would say that they are chayav. Tashma. Habayit v'aliyah shel shnayim. They live in a duplex where one person owns the lower house and one person owns the upper house. Shinaflu. The building collapsed. Amar balaliyah lebalabayit. The person who owned the upper part of the duplex says to the person who owns the lower half, leave note, go ahead and build it. V'hu eno rotze. And the guy who owns the house down below is unwilling to build it. He has no interest. The person who owns the upper half of the duplex, the upper floor, he can then build the bayit, the lower part. And in building that bayit, he can live in it in the interim. And once the bal habayit, the one who owns the lower duplex, is willing to reimburse him for the expenditures he makes, then he'll have to move upstairs. Then he'll build his aliyah on top of it and live up there. But in the interim, he's allowed to live for free downstairs, because all you see here is that once the owner of the house reimburses him fully for the expenditures that he made, then he's forced to leave and go upstairs and build his upper part of the duplex and live up there. But until that point in time, he lives there for free. So you see, yitziotavdu mechayev le balabayit. The balabayit is obligated to pay the full expenditures, haschorolo, but the rental that he is basically living in that lower house for free, over there he doesn't have to pay rent, or there's no deduction for the rental usage down there. Shmamina, from this you see, zenenet, v'zelochaser is patur. Once again, the beneficiary is the person who lives in the upper duplex. He's living downstairs now. Zelochaser, the balabite's losing nothing because he had no intentions of building this house, and he wouldn't have built this house, so he wouldn't have gotten this rental income. So that's zenenet, v'zelochaser, and we see that there's no need for him to pay rent when he lives in the lower house. Mar says, Shani Hotam, the Beit al Aliyah Mishtabed. You can't prove anything from here because the upper part of the duplex, in some sense, has a lien on the lower duplex because he needs the lower duplex to hold up his house. And in order for him to have a house, he must have the lower part built for the upper part to be there. So since he has a lien, or basically a right, on the lower part in order to structurally hold up his upper half, it's not that he's living there for free, squatting. But rather, he has somewhat of a right to live there because the balabayit, the one who owned that lower half, refused to build it. And as refusing to build it, he's exercising his lien and living there in the interim until he's reimbursed, and then he will build the upper part of the house. So you can't prove anything from that case. Tashma Riyud Omer, Avze Dar Bechatzer Chaviro Shlomidato, Tzarich Lalot Lo Schar. Riyud says no, that in this case where he lives there without permission, he has to pay rent from that. And if that's the case, shmamina, zenenev, zlo chaser, chayav. In that case, he would be obligated. If this individual is living there for free of rent, and he doesn't have permission to be there, he simply put up the house, then he is obligated to pay rent to the balabayit as long as he lives there. So from a Yehuda, you would see, zenenev, zlo chaser, is chayav. There's a problem because there is a chisaron there, which is that his living there causes the walls to blacken or darken. The way that Rashi interprets that is that you use fire inside of the house in their day, and that causes a soot or a blackening of the walls, but that's only true in a new house. That is not true in an older house. An old house that's already been used for a while, the walls have already been blackened, and there's nothing additional happening when you live there. Other than when you go into a brand new house, then when you blacken the walls, you're actually doing something that detracts from the value. And the reason, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you would have to reimburse here for the rental is not because you're living there free of rent, but because of the diminution in value that you are causing by having this new house now not be worth as much as it was before. The Rashba makes a point over here, which is important, it's something that we had discussed previously, which is that you see from here that as long as there's no loss to the party whose property is being used, then the one who's benefiting, we do not ask them to make any payment for zenenev zelo chaser. But as soon as there is a loss to the parties whose property it is or whose house it is, then we ask the person who's nenev to pay up. Now that might seem obvious, but what you have here you have is an imbalance in value, which is that the rental income that he would get from this place far exceeds the diminution in value caused by the blackening of the walls. But what you see from here, and this is what the Rashba points out, is that once there is any chisaron to the balabayit, then we throw the entire benefit, all the hana'ah, we say now you must pay up and give to the balabayit. So over here, even though really all you should have to do is reimburse him for the change in value the diminution in value from the blackening of the walls. Nevertheless, we say no. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he pays the full schar. He pays for the full rental income that was there, because once there's a loss involved, it's no longer zenene v'zelo chaser. It's zenene v'zeh chaser, even though the chisaron is not of equal value, on par with the hana'ah that is being gained from this property. And even though here the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Yehuda and say he does not have to pay, that's not because they don't fundamentally agree with Rabbi Yehuda that you have to pay or compensate when you get benefit and there is chisaron. They just believe that there's another overarching issue here, which is that the Baal Aliyah, the guy who owns the upper duplex, has a lien on the lower duplex. And that lien gives him the right to live there and even cause the diminution in value, because the person who's on the lower duplex is not fulfilling his obligations to put up the house so that the person who lives upstairs can put up his house on top. Shalchu bei Rabbi Ami. So they sent this issue of Zenen of Zilo Choser to Rabbi Ami. Amar, he answered, V'chi ma'aseh lo, ma'chisaro, ma'eziko. So he basically says, Zenene, Zelo Choser, there is no chisaron over here to the party that is providing the property or whatever it is here that the other one is benefiting from. Since there is no loss, there's no obligation of payment. And therefore, the person who's getting benefit should not have to make any payment over there. Says, let us ponder the matter, or when the question comes up again, maybe we'll look at it. They sent it again to Rabbi Chir Ba'aba to see what he would thought. He says, they keep sending me the same question. If I had not found something, or I had something to say about it, of course I would have sent it to them already. Why do they keep sending me the same question? I know they have this question. I obviously don't have something or an insight to say about it. And therefore, they're sending it multiple times will not change the fact that I don't have any insight or any answer to give them. Itmar, Rav Kana, Amar Rav Yochanan, Eino Tzarich, Lalodushar. So Rav Kana, the name of Rabbi Yochanan, who says that you don't have to pay, or in other words, Zenene v'zelo chaser is patur. Rabbi Abau, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, tzarich lalot lo schar. So Rabbi Abau, bringing the member from Rabbi Yochanan, says you do have to pay, and Zenene v'zelo chaser is chayav. So now you have two member from Rabbi Yochanan, one from Rav Kana and one from Rabbi Abau, and they have opposite conclusions. One says Rabbi Yochanan believed it was patur, and one says Rabbi Yochanan believed that it was chayav. Amar Papa had Rabbi Abau la befeirush itmar. But Papa says that which Rabbi Abau assumed that Rabbi Yochanan had said that you are chayav for zenene v'zelo chaser, he did not hear that explicitly from Rabbi Yochanan. Ela michlal itmar, he inferred it from an incident with Rabbi Yochanan. Ditnan. We have a Mishnah. Natal Evan Okorah Shel Hekdesh. Mishnah Mila speaking about a case where the Gizbar, the treasurer of Hekdesh, went ahead and took a stone or a beam from Hekdesh. Harzeh lo ma'al. There's no Mi'ila, because the Gizbar, as the treasurer of Hekdesh, is permitted to move around and to work with the items of Hekdesh. So his simple taking of the item is not Mi'ila, it's not a misappropriation of Hekdesh, and therefore there's no Mi'ila over there. Natna lechaveiro, if he gives it to his friend to utilize, hu ma'al v'chaveiro lo ma'al, then he is responsible for that change in ownership, not the friend. Because once he gives it to the other party, then he has taken it out of the possession of Ekdesh. And that is the mi'ilah, that's the misappropriation of Ekdesh. He is taking it from the property of Ekdesh, which he's in charge of as the gizbar, and handing it to the other party. So once he hands it to the other party, the mi'ilah, the misappropriation happened. Once mila happens, the item turns into chulin. So the part recipient, or the receiving party, has no responsibilities there because it's already chulin. But the gizbar who gave it to him will be responsible, and he is moel. Bana'a l'toch beito. If the gizbar, the treasurer, builds it into his house, harizeh lo ma'al, he has no mi'ila there, because he hasn't done anything to this brick or this board that has changed it, or changed its ownership. Ad shi'idur tachtera shaveh pruta. Until he gets benefit from it, living under it, for the value of a pruta. V'amar Shmuel, and Shmuel qualifies that statement and says, "Behu shenicha pi aruba." That's only if he put it over the skylight or a hole in the roof. So Rashi claims that the reason that Shmuel qualifies that is to tell us that he didn't build it into the building. Because if he built it into the building, that already would be considered a significant enough change that he'd been mo'el at the time that he built it into the building. So what we want to have here is a scenario where he uses it in the building, in a manner which is reversible or does not affect the item itself, whether it's the board or the brick that he's using. And therefore, Shmuel says it was put on the piaruba. It's something that was just used to cover over an existing hole or an existing skylight. And therefore, there was nothing that changed about the item. And therefore, to be in violation of Mi'ilah, he'll have to get a benefit of a pruta's worth, live under it, or get a benefit from it of a shave pruta worth of hana'ah, in order to be chayav. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot disagree with Rashi, and say that even if he builds it into the building, as long as he didn't change the form of the item, and it can be pulled out of the building, and handed back to the Hegdesh, that's also not Mi'ilah, because building into the building is a shinoi achozer lebriato. It's a change that goes back to its original state. And if that's the case, he's not Moel, because he hasn't changed anything. He has the gizbar, is permitted to move these things around. If he sticks it into his house, he still hasn't done anything that changes the object and where he would be kone the object. On the other hand, the Meiri, the Shita Mekubetzin, in defense of Rashi, say that once you build it into a building, even though it's wholly intact, and you could take the building apart to get it out, since most people don't take apart the building to take it out, it's considered as if he's taken it out of the possession of Ekdesh, even though he didn't actually change physically the property itself of the item. And therefore, for the Balei HaTosafot, the reason that it says that it's put on Pi Aruba is to tell you or to exclude a case where he actually does something physically with the item, where he actually either planes the board, he cuts the board, or he shapes the brick. In that case, it would be Mi'ilah right away because he's changed the object. Otherwise, it would not be Mi'ilah if he simply put it in the house as well, just like when he puts it on top of the Aruba. Now, the reason we're bringing this case is because of the following incident, which is where Rabbi Abou learnt, or thought he learnt from Rabbi Yochanan, that Zenenet v'ze lo chaser is Chayav, which is, V'yoti Rabbi Abou kameid Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Abou was there in front of Rabbi Yochanan, v'kamar mishmeid Shmuel. And he says, in the name of Shmuel, Zoto Meret, from this you would conclude, Hadar b'chatzer chavero shelo midato, someone who lives in his friend's property without his permission, without his knowledge, he's squatting there, tzarich la'lod lo schar, then you have to pay, or you have to give them compensation or rent for it. Because over here, Gizbar took it without the permission, without the knowledge of Hegdesh, he put it into his house, and then when he lives under it, a shavet pruta's worth, he's Moel. Well, how could he get a shavet pruta's worth of value if when you take something without permission and then utilize it, you're not chayav, you're not responsible to pay? Zenene, v'zelo chaser. The gizbar is getting benefit from it. The hektesh doesn't lose anything. So why does he have, anything to hektesh? Why is he getting any benefit by living under it? The only way you could say that he's getting benefit is if he would otherwise have to compensate hektesh for that rental income, quote unquote, for the benefit of living under that beam. Or under that brick. And for that reason, you see, or what he concluded was, Zenene, v'zelo chaser, is chayav lalo tzchar, v'shotaklei. After he presented this, Rabbi Yochanan gave him no response. Yusavar, Rabbi Abou concluded, midishotik modilei. That since he didn't respond and he was silent, that was acquiescence. Silence is acquiescence. And therefore, he believed that was Rabbi Yochanan shita. V'lohi, and that was the incorrect conclusion. Ashkuche lo ashkachbe. He didn't pay attention to him. I mean that Rabbi Yochanan was dismissing it out of hand. He thought it was completely wrong, so he ignored what Rabbi Abou said. As Tosafot points out of here, Ushmol atzmo hadarbe. Shmuel himself backs out of this position, as we see from the Gemara in Baba Metzia, Kid Rabba, because of the Shita of Rabba, Dama Rabba, Hekdesh shalot midat, kehejot midat domi. That is because Hekdesh, where you have no permission and no knowledge of Hekdesh, is the equivalent of when you're taking it from Hedjot Midat with their knowledge, meaning that they are aware of the fact, and it's as if they filed an objection to what you're doing. The case where we have Zenen of his little chaser is where he went into his friend's house without permission, without the knowledge of the other individual. So in that case where he doesn't register any objection, you're staying there as a question of Zenen of his little chaser. On the other hand, if he knows about it and he objects to it, then clearly you would have to give him schar, you would have to give rent, because he made it clear to you that he wasn't interested in you living there. And if you did live there anyway, then he could collect rent. And Hekdesh, even when it doesn't know, does know. And that's what Rashi says over here. Hekdesh lekele meimar shalomi dat, didat shechina ika. You can never say that there isn't the knowledge of Hekdesh. Meaning that Hekdesh always knows, because who is the quote-unquote balim of Hekdesh? That's a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And a Kodesh Baruch Hu knows everything that happens. So if you take that beam or that brick of Hekdesh, Hashem is aware of it. And clearly he is filing an objection because he doesn't want Hekdesh to be used for these purposes. And therefore it's as if you live there with the knowledge of the Baal HaBayit, and the Baal HaBayit is objecting to what you are doing. Tosafot, on the other hand, doesn't like what Rashi says over here, that it means that Hashem has yidi'ah, as if knowledge is the key issue over here, because it's not whether he knows or doesn't know. The key issue is whether he agreed or didn't agree. whether he gave acquiescence to you living there or he didn't give acquiescence. So sometimes when he doesn't know, he didn't give acquiescence, but he also didn't object. But if he does know, then he can file an objection or not. So Rashi sees the two as being equated, which is that knowledge, by definition, gives you the outcome of whether he agrees or doesn't agree. The other Rishonim, you can see this in the Tosafot, says, Elanira, Kejod midat dami klomar didat shchina ika shelo yene adam below miyila. Means that, when it means that the hedyot kedat means that the hedyot files an objection or does not agree to you living there. And therefore the shchina is automatically assumed to have filed that objection, no matter what the circumstance is. Even if you hear no objection, even if there is no objection, it's automatically assumed. And that's what it means, that shchina shelo midat, when things deal with hekdesh that are not clearly with permission, are the equivalent of when a hedyot objects, because the default status of hekdesh is that there is an objection over there. Okay, we're going to stop here on the top line of Chof Aleph, Amud Aleph.